It's the most magical time of year. Christmas is in full swing in Russia. And while some Christmas traditions seem like Western style, Christmas and New Year in Russia is a whole different thing.
We decided to head to Suzdal, a picturesque Russian town which is about to turn 1,000 years old in 2024. With its snow-covered churches, traditional houses, and a true festive feeling, it's the perfect setting to find out more about New Year and Christmas traditions in Russia. Mariana Arkhipova, a historian and ethnologist, will help us understand more about this special time of year.
This place is a winter wonderland. It's absolutely amazing. I want to ask you about some of the Christmas traditions. Is it true that they had to be reinvented over time? Talk to me about how Christmas became New Year's here in Russia.
Actually, it was under Peter the Great that we started celebrating New Year's on December 31st. He decreed that there should be public festivities with fireworks and bonfires. After he died, however, Christmas remained the main winter holiday. Traditions surrounding the New Year's celebration were reinvented during the Soviet times. After the 1917 revolution, the Bolsheviks wanted to eradicate associations with Christmas, so New Year's was banned in the 1920s and 30s. By the 1930s, a new generation had grown up not knowing what celebrating Christmas felt like. So the Soviet authorities decided to reconstruct or reinvent New Year's celebrations. The first New Year's Eve was officially marked in the winter of 1935 to 1936. So you could argue that the Soviets deliberately created New Year's traditions, but they tried to make sure that its celebration was different from Christmas.
Is it true that the Christmas tree was once banned and then brought back and then banned again and then brought back? It seems like it's an interesting relationship with the Christmas tree or the yulka and the Russian traditions.
I wouldn't say that the Christmas or New Year tree was ever banned for a long time. There's a widespread belief that the Christmas tree was banned during World War I, but it's not true. It's just that many Russian families decided against Christmas trees because they were associated with a German tradition, and Germany was Russia's main enemy at the time. The tree was only officially banned in the 1920s and early 1930s by the Soviet government, because people associated it with Christmas. In 1936, however, when New Year's Eve became institutionalized as a holiday, the tree reemerged in people's homes and, most importantly, in official places. They started putting on shows for children, but again, it was to celebrate New Year's, not Christmas.
What about Christmas decorations for that Christmas tree? Do they have any special meaning? What goes on them? Is there anything special about how you decorate a Christmas tree here in Russia?
Small and pre-decorated Christmas trees were first sold in German confectionery stores. So the first ornaments were actually confectionery items, such as candy, apples, nuts wrapped in foil, etc. Those were the predecessors of Christmas ornaments. When Christmas trees were allowed again in the Soviet Union, they also began to manufacture tree decorations. I think Soviet ornaments are an incredible historical source because they reflect political, historical, and other realities of the day. And it's no coincidence that New Year's is the main family holiday in our country. There is this tradition where you open a cupboard and pull out a dusty suitcase with your parents, grandparents, and even great-grandparents' holiday decorations. It really brings generations together. In many homes, you have ornaments hailing from different eras and lots of historical context on one Christmas tree. It's another thing that makes this celebration so family-centric.
For almost a century, some of the most beautiful Christmas tree ornaments have been made right here at this factory in Nizhny Novgorod. Extremely fragile, these masterpieces are all handmade from glass. Let's find out more. So
fire, glass, and air. These are your ingredients. How do you get from those raw materials to get an ornament?
Glass and fire are inanimate things. But when you combine them, when you heat glass by fire and breathe air into it, you get an ornament. You breathe life into it, and you get an ornament, a living thing of sorts. Here's how it happens. These ornaments then find their way into every household. It's so rewarding and so important.
Now, I hear that you can't even stop for a second. You always have to be in motion. What happens if you stop?
Right, you can't stop, because glass will cool down. And once it cools, no matter how much air you blow into it, you won't get an ornament. So it's a process that can't be interrupted.
What is the most difficult ornament to make?
The most difficult, in my opinion, is a ball. Yes, because you use a technique called free blowing. The ball needs to be perfectly even and round. It's not easy. Mold blowing allows you to make ornaments in any shape. You're given a mold, and you just blow molten glass into it. There are certain nuances and tricks, too, but generally it's less challenging.
Now, it seems to me this is an unusual career. How does one actually become a glass blower?
You're right. They don't teach you this craft anywhere. I teach apprentices here at the factory. That's why they hired me, because they wanted to train a new generation of glass workers. It's a unique profession. We're few and far between.
The ornaments produced here are some of the most famous in the world. So what makes them so extraordinary? So this is interesting to me. It's my understanding that in the 20th century, there weren't any Christmas trees at all, for a while at least. So how did this idea of Christmas ornaments begin in the first place?
There were Christmas ornaments in Russia in the early 20th century, and people certainly decorated their Christmas trees back then. The first appeared in the early 19th century, but only in the Tsar's palace in 1817. The tradition was gradually adopted by wealthy people later on. Here in Nizhny Novgorod, the habit of decorating Christmas trees was established in the 1880s. However, they didn't produce the ornaments in our city until 1936. Our museum tells this story. We're in the museum now. Here we have the earliest ornaments on display. Some are made from glass. Here they are. Others are cotton wool, and there are many of them. They were easy to make, cheap, and in great demand because by 1936 there were almost no ornaments left in the country. We have a remarkable rarity here. This is the very first glass ball. It has a layer of silver inside. It used to have a coat of lacquer on the outside too, but it's obviously peeled away since 1936. Still, the ball survives, and we treasure it. So here we have the oldest and the most important decorations. We also made bead garlands and garlands made of paper flags.
Each of these decorations are hand-painted by the artists working in this factory. You'll never find two identical pieces.
Yulia, this is fascinating to watch. I know that here at the factory you have a special technique. What makes the painting that you do here unique?
The ornaments at our factory are completely handmade. Both glass blowing and painting are done entirely by hand. That's what makes them unique. We also have ornaments painted with watercolor technique. It's our in-house invention. A very complicated technique, very labor-intensive, and very beautiful. You can't find ornaments like these anywhere else.
Now, in a world that is increasingly becoming mechanized, you do everything here by hand, as you've already mentioned. And it doesn't seem to lose its magic. Do you think people need this magic? What's the case here?
Absolutely. It's precisely because we're living in this fast-paced, high-tech world that people crave this kind of warmth, soul, and emotion we infuse in our products. Every ornament creates a specific mood, and no two ornaments are identical, even though they may be similar.
And at New Year's time, when you walk out into the street and you see your ornaments out there, does it give you a sense of pride? What do you feel?
It's very rewarding to see our handmade ornaments on Christmas trees, to see how they make people happy, how they glitter and shine in the festive lights. It's a great feeling.
Now, what about Santa Claus versus Father Frost or Dead Maros? We know we have Santa Claus. Everyone knows the history there. But Dead Maros, kind of interesting. It's my understanding that he used to be kind of a horrible, evil figure. But how did he turn into this jolly guy that brings in the New Year's spirit?
There were different characters in Slavic mythology, but just one character united them all. He was known under different names, Treskun, Zuzia, Morozko, or just Ded, old man. It was a being, a god that was responsible for winter frosts, but he was never associated with Christmas or New Year's Eve. Later in the mid-19th century, Father Christmas appeared, analogous to Saint Nicholas in the West. Yet Father Frost, as we know him today, is a Soviet invention. His current appearance took shape over a long period of time. By and by, he got a long winter coat, usually bright colored, grew a long beard, got a long magical staff, and so on. But it's true that he was constructed from various images.
Interesting. So, it's a beautiful place. Shall we go check out some more of Suzdal?
Okay.
Хорошо. So we were talking about Father Frost, Ded Moroz, but here he's accompanied with the Snow Maiden, Snegurushka. Can you tell me about her? What's her role? How did she come into play?
It's a fascinating story. As I told you before, Father Frost has always been associated with Saint Nicholas, Santa Claus, and Christmas, which was odd for a Soviet holiday. So they decided to invent a companion for him. Initially, different characters were tried, such as little rabbits, puppets, etc. What's more, Father Frost is a mighty character. Some little kids were afraid of him. When the Snow Maiden was added to celebrations, children felt more at ease. She acted as a kind of intermediary between children and Father Frost. Another thing that's important about the Snow Maiden is the link with Saint Nicholas was disconcerting for Soviet authorities. A saint could not have a granddaughter for obvious reasons, but our Father Frost did have one, so it helped strip away the image of religious undertones, and kids just love the Snow Maiden too.
Very cool. Now, what about Ded Moroz himself? Is it true that each nationality around Russia or within the Russian Federation has their own version of Ded Moroz?
Different peoples of Russia, ethnically a very diverse country, have a lot of different characters and traditions of their own. But there's a common thread. New Year's is a transition. It's a passage into something that is unknown and therefore dangerous. And where there's uncertainty and danger, there's always superstitions, rituals, and beliefs which help people safely transition into a new state. In addition, there is this widespread belief that nature is governed by spirits or some superior powers, which leads to the emergence of various nature-related figures. These either punish people for wrongdoing or reward them for the good they've done. There are many heroes like that throughout Russia. The best known, perhaps, is the Tatar Kish Babai, an old man who looks like Father Frost, but he is always accompanied by his daughter and kind forest spirits. In Karelia, they have Pakanye, who is actually a burly young guy. He is described as a Karelian young fellow Frost, underscoring his uniqueness as opposed to our familiar Father Frost.
Okay, so in Italy, they throw things out at the last minute. In England, they leave the back door open so that it can let the new year out. In Spain, for some reason, in the last moments of the old year, they eat 12 grapes before the beginning of the new year. What are some Russian traditions for the new year?
New Year's Eve is mainly a family holiday. So you have your whole family or your closest friends gathered around the table. The TV is usually on. People watch the president's address, followed, of course, by the chimes of the Spasskaya Tower clock on the Red Square. You're supposed to make a wish while the clock is chiming. Some people just think of their wish, others scribble it on a piece of paper, burn it, and put the ashes into their champagne glass. This wish should come true. After that, outdoor fun begins. People go outside for fireworks.
Kath asked about food. There's a lot of different New Year's traditions when it comes to food. One of them is a fish wearing a fur coat, but talk to me, what kind of food do you guys have at New Year's?
Talking about traditional New Year's food, we make all kinds of hearty salads with meat, fish, and mayonnaise, such as the famous Olivier salad, herring under a fur coat, the mimosa salad, and so forth. Mandarin oranges are an interesting symbol of New Year's Eve. Previously, they were part of typical children gifts, assorted sweets in pretty boxes, and were considered a rarity. These days, mandarins are easily available all year round, but people still like buying them in winter because of this association with New Year's. Overall, the menu is about prosperity. Not everyone can afford caviar on an average day, but if you are going to have caviar at least once a year, it's probably going to be on New Year's Eve. It's about celebration, abundance, and sharing with your loved ones. For some reason, people tend to save their best dishes for New Year's. Probably it's because it's the most family-centric holiday of all. So, as you can see, these traditions are flexible, but their essence remains the same, as they aim to evoke strong, positive emotions, which help perpetuate these traditions over many years.
Well, I can't wait to try all of it. So thank you very much for our conversation. It has been incredibly interesting.
The ancient town of Suzdal remembers many traditions that have been long lost in big cities. Here you can get a real taste of the beautiful and festive Russian winter.
Denise, this place is amazing. It's a magical wonderland frozen in time. What can you find here in Suzdal that you can't really find anyplace else?
First off, it's one of the oldest towns in Russia. We will celebrate its 1,000th anniversary next year. Not from its founding, mind you, just from its first mention in the chronicles. It's from here that much of Russian history has played out. What makes it especially unique is that it has retained its original appearance, almost original. You can see the beautiful temples and domes. It's due to the area being a victim of logistics in the mid-19th century. Roads and railways bypassed us, and the town stood still. It remained as it used to be.
Now, when it comes to Christmas traditions and New Year's festivities, a lot of Russian traditional folklore kind of make their way into the stories and the traditions. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
A lot of it comes from Russia's past. Since 1700, our New Year celebrations have coincided with Sviatki, or Holy Days. They would begin on Christmas Eve. By the way, you were not allowed to eat anything on Christmas Eve except sochivo, a kind of wheat porridge, and only after the first star came out. Then we would celebrate Christmas, the beginning of the holiday season, stretching all the way until Epiphany. There were many interesting traditions, like fortune telling. People have always been interested to find out about their future.
So I can't help but ask, this is a sleigh. It seems like the perfect time of day with all the snow. Do you want to go for a ride?
Of course. Hey, coachman.
So I have to associate this with the crazy Russians, but you guys also have a tradition of diving into freezy, icy waters in the middle of this cold temperature. It's during the Epiphany. Can you talk to me about the Epiphany and the traditions that you have associated with that?
Крещение.
Epiphany is about remembering the baptism of Jesus in Jordan by John the Baptist. A Christian must follow the life of Jesus Christ in every aspect, even in the little things. Christ was baptized on that day, so our people take a dip just like him. This tradition might seem crazy to those who aren't a part of it, yet it still exists here. People take the obligatory dip. What's interesting, though, is no one catches a cold. I personally have never heard of anyone getting ill after taking a dip on Epiphany Day. There is a little secret, though. The water under the ice is 4 degrees Celsius. It can be minus 10, 20, or 30 outside. So when you get into the water, you actually feel warmer. Just remember to get out quickly and put on some warm clothes afterwards. You'll be just fine.
Now, for me, I was just talking to our team. It doesn't get much more Christmas than this right now because we are dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh. It's the definition of jingle bells. But Russia, you guys have an association with Christmas and winter, the Troika, which are three white horses. Can you talk to me about the Troika and the significance of that?
Out in the country, people preferred troikas, which could go really fast. It's easier to ride faster in a sleigh than in a carriage or a peasant cart. Russians like going fast. They enjoy the adrenaline rush. We love extreme speed, extreme cold, and sometimes even the odd extreme drink.
So, Russian winters, there's a stereotype. They're dark, they're cold, they're gloomy. It's a kind of a negative, depressing stereotype. But at the same time, you have lots of traditions of Christmas and celebrations and parties. It's a warm time that's associated here in Russia. Talk to me a little bit about some of the other traditions that you have here.
Winter is the season when we celebrate Sviatki, or holy days, from Christmas to Epiphany. These are some of the most important holidays for us. It's about merriment, joy, and celebration. It's about ancient rituals and fortune telling.
Now, you just mentioned Sviatki, the holy days, or it's a time of fortune telling, I guess, that comes just before Christmas. Talk to me a little bit about that tradition that you have here in Russia.
As I said, Sviatki begins on Christmas Eve. We call this day Sochelnik in Russian. But Christmas Eve was the day when children began singing carols. They would go from house to house, praising Jesus and asking for gifts. People thought that if you didn't reward carolers with something, you would have a difficult year ahead. About fortune telling, it's something women are fond of doing. They're curious. They'd like to know what's going to happen. There were many different fortune-telling rituals. One traditional way of doing it was to eavesdrop under someone else's window to learn about your coming year. Girls would also throw a shoe over a fence to see which way the toe was pointed. That was supposed to be the direction from where their future husband would come. Girls would also sometimes hail strangers in the streets. "What's your name?" they would ask. They believed they could learn their future husband's name this way. It was considered a sin not to be merry during those days. You were supposed to have fun, to visit each other and praise Jesus. But there was a catch. It wasn't appropriate for women to go visiting around Christmas time. People believed that. If a woman was your first visitor, then all the women in your household would be ill all year long. Later, Soviet traditions emerged. People started saying, "How you celebrate the new year, so you will spend it." They thought that they had to repay all their debts and get rid of all of their junk before New Year's. But that is mostly Soviet mythology. Traditionally, though, we've been a Christian country. We're steeped in Christian tradition, which is 1,000 years old.
Very cool. And from all of us here at Inland Visions, Merry Christmas. And a Happy New Year!
С наступающим Новым годом вас!